110 days in Ann Arbor, Michigan, on the football field.
We don't want to coach average. I don't want to be around you. Why be around average?
We do want to win because winning is the epitome of team effort.
Every coach who ever put a whistle around their neck strives to be the head coach at The Ohio State University.
Welcome back, everybody, the Buckeye Bar Guys here on Buckeye Bar Talk. I'm Mike.
And I'm John.
Tonight's date is Friday, November 4th, 2022. And we're going to discuss the previous game this week from earlier, Penn State. Tomorrow's game against Northwestern. And in between, we will talk about the playoff rankings since the inaugural rankings dropped this week. So let's get a lot of stuff to go through tonight. So let's get on going with this. Penn State. So I think, you know, obviously the Buckeyes ended up pulling out, you know, in the fourth quarter. It was a tough one up to that point. I think that, I'm trying to think what the, was it 44-31?
Yeah, that was the final score.
Yeah. So, but like in typical Ohio State fashion, I mean, it's 21-16. They're down, and then it's like they wake up and they quickly score like 4 touchdowns, it seemed like, in a matter of minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was they scored 28 points like nothing in the fourth quarter, but it was a rough go to get to that point.
So, basically my thoughts, just how everything kind of played out is, you know, things I really liked. Well, so we'll start with that. Just things I kind of liked on it is that, you know, back against the wall, good football team at Penn State. And you know, they're on the ropes there in the fourth quarter. I mean, that had upset just written all over it at that point when it was, 21-16, yeah, it's tight the whole game. Nothing's working, it seems like, when it comes to the offense. But the defense is playing pretty good. They, you know, they had a bad missed tackle to give them the first touchdown, but you know, I thought they looked pretty good. And with all of that going on, you know, they found a way to start getting touchdowns. And that was at the end of what they needed. It was that Ohio State barrage. And when that Ohio State barrage is on, like, they go down 21-16, and it's just bing, bang, boom, 3 plays, and they're in the end zone. And, you know, when they are working like that, you know, they're just really hard to beat. And they just was very efficient and quickly scored a bunch of touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't working until it was. And then when it was very impressive. So, I mean, hats off to the Buckeyes. It was a hard fought win. You know, before all this playoff madness, before Ryan Day, you know, got scrutinized about everything, I mean, we would just been enamored and love this win. I mean, and I do feel for Ryan Day sometimes, because it does feel like, you know, we might be a little too harsh on, you know, his play style, or if he's getting the most out of his players like Urban did. And I mean, this is a game that an Urban Meyer team could easily lost, you know, being at that point in the game. I mean, we saw many times when Urban couldn't get things going on the road, and it just like, let's do our best to get out of here. And sometimes it got ugly going the other way. So, I mean, Ryan Day's team stuck in it. His defense played a hell of a game, and they ended up just blowing the doors off Penn State in the fourth quarter. Fourth quarter still during regulation. It still counts. So, you know, the offense did its job. Would I like different play calls? Sure, I would have, but you know, he defended himself. I've heard some people break it down. They say he had good play calls. So he knows a hell of a lot more about football than I do, so I trust him on that. Bubble screens, though, you know, it is frustrating when no one's blocking them and you can't move the ball. It is frustrating when you constantly run stretch runs into the boundary and, you know, the running back doesn't have the vision for it.
Yeah.
Presumably. I mean, a combination of things, maybe blocking, maybe vision. And it could just, I mean, it felt like maybe we should have went vertical a little bit earlier in that game, but well, he, you win by 13 in Happy Valley. Just, you know, you're glad to do it. So, yeah, I mean, it was good game altogether. I wish the running game would have took off a little bit more. They average 3.8 yards per carry. And let's face it, a lot of that was when Trey finally kind of was like, hey, you know, you're going to run through this hole and you're going to have a lead blocker. And then he was Trey again, and he had a 41 yard touchdown.
Yeah. Before we get into some of the concerns, I mean, just a couple other things I wanted to mention is that, you know, I mean, offensively, and then I'll move to defensively. I think, I mean, the obvious answer who the two players of the game was first starting, you know, I mean, Marv Jr. Yes. is just a freak. I mean, he like for a minute there, he was literally the only thing that kept the offense in the game. It felt like that was what he was doing. And yeah, I would have loved to see them go earlier to the game and start getting, I mean, he could have, I don't know what his final numbers were, but I mean, he could have had like a 250 yard receiving.
Game, yeah. It was like 10 for 185. I mean, it was a big day.
Yeah. And, so, I mean, he was dominant. And, you know, Joey Porter Jr. is very good. They have a very good secondary. Those other guys are very good. And he made him look foolish out there. I mean, he was the best player offensively on the field.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's arguments made. You can make say he was the best player on the field until you get to our defensive guy, JT Tuimalo. I mean, the guy was just an absolute freak. And, I think that, I mean, he forces a fumble and recovers it. He bats up an interception that Harrison gets. He intercepts one on himself. And then that interception, I'm like, how does a defensive lineman make that first interception? I mean, he goes down diving low to catch it. And then,
he makes
maybe the play of the year.
He taps it up to himself. It's not just he goes down low and catches it. I mean, he had to get control of the ball. He didn't have it clean at first. Yeah. He hits it up and then catches it.
Yeah, that was a wide receiver right there. And that's crazy. And then he goes and makes possibly the play of the year. You know, it could be very arguably coming down in the award shows that, you know, that wins play of the year, because that was the craziest pick six. I mean, the man's got a hands like a tight end or something. Just like puts both hands. I mean, I know he played tight end in high school, but he just puts both hands on the ball and just catches it in midair.
Those are some big paws, man. I mean, those are some big paws he has.
So, I mean, just talk about freak show. And, you know, I love Jack Sawyer. Jack Sawyer's having a good season. I mean, he's not having a bad season, but I think that to me, I know they tried to do a lot early in the season that Jack Sawyer was going to get the first at bat at the Jack position. But I think that, you know, he still needs to play. He still needs to be rotated in, but I mean, Tuimalo, I mean, he was just him standing up. I mean, he was, that's your Leo. I mean, when you say that the Leo becomes the king of the jungle, he felt like the king of the jungle to me. And, that's somebody that I think he just move all over in that front seven, and he's just going to be a disruptive force wherever. I mean, he drafts back and catches interceptions. He catches interceptions at the line of scrimmage. He's sacking quarterbacks. He's batting balls down. I mean, there's nothing more. He literally did everything in the game.
Yeah. I'm dubbing him JT Tuimui Wow after that game. Cause that was one of the more impressive defensive performances I had ever seen. And I watched Chase Young in 2019 very carefully, very closely. And that was just like otherworldly, just what he did. I mean, we're talking two sacks. I think I have it up here. Hold on. Three tackles for loss, a strip sack, fumble, recovered his own strip sack, two interceptions, a pass breakup that went to interception, and a pick six. So, I mean, that's a game you dream for. Of course, now that's his standard and he has to keep on doing it. But wow, what a hell of a game. Oh, six total tackles, too.
And, you know, and the difference between him, though, and Chase and 19 is that as we saw as the season went on and there was a lot of focus on making sure everybody knows where Chase Young is, you know, it just other guys didn't really, come to try. I mean,
yeah.
Zach Harrison's a freshman. You know, some of the other guys just, they, you didn't have that year where you had, you know, Tyquan and, you know, Bosa and Hubbard and, where the bun and,
Jalen Holmes.
Jaden. Yeah, Holmes. I mean, and it just, once Chase was kind of taken out of the game, it seemed like the defensive line, not all the time, but in parts they were neutralized.
Yeah.
You got a lot of guys on this defensive line that are playing really, really good football. I mean, Mike Hall's been almost unblockable. Now Tyleek is looking like he's in spots of being unblockable. Tyron's having a great year. Jerron Cage is looking really good right now. Hamilton's looking really good right now. Sawyer's looking pretty good. Baptiste is having, when he's in there,
Baptiste is looking good. Up. Yeah.
You know, Harrison's looking really good. So it's like, you know, it's like, let JT now just be a freak. And good luck trying to block him, because a lot of these other guys can make plays. So, you know,
yeah, good luck. Sure. Yep. Yeah, exactly. Just let him be your star of your defensive line and let the other guys just, you know, fill in where he can't.
Yeah. I'm very pleased still with the defense. I've been saying this all year, and I know this was the most points they've given up this season, but I mean, one of them was a garbage time, you know, late touchdown where it seemed like Ohio State, you know, we were joking here that it seemed like they backed off defense a little bit. And we were saying, you know, after they got the cover, like, you know, play for the cover, play for the gamblers, man, at that point. But, you know, they played.
I hate when teams have those mental lapses when they get a game in hand and then they just like play like shit the next series. Like, that's just disappointing. Like, I'm always of the belief that, you know, you got to have the right mentality all the time.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed like they kind of went more into a prevent defense, just, keep everything in front of them. And, you know, that seems like always what happens with prevent defense.
Exactly.
You always, somebody goes out and scores. But it is what it is. They gave up a garbage time touchdown. Defense kept them in the game. And, you know, and that's kind of the difference, you know, I know Penn State, I don't know what their final rushing numbers were, you know, Ohio State held them pretty in check running the ball. So that was different from last year in comparison to when you think about those. I mean, I know Penn State didn't necessarily run on them a bunch last year, but, you know, they weren't outmatched and they kept the game close. And that's with our offense. That is literally the biggest thing you can ask for, is they can't let another team start, you know, bullying you around and, you know, forcing their will on you. Mm-hmm. And as long as you can stay in the game, you got to assume your offense is going to be able to do what they did in the fourth quarter. At some point in the game, something's going to click. They're too good for it not to click. And, you know, they're going to start scoring.
Yeah. And I think we kind of, that's a lot of what we were saying to each other during the game too, or after the game during that fourth quarter onslaught. It's just like, man, if they keep them in the game, I just don't know if there is a team in the country that can put away their offense if their defense keeps them within striking distance. Like, that's going to be a tall ask for anybody. And there's some great offenses out there. So who knows? But if the defense can keep them in the game, where that offense isn't down, you know, two scores at any point, watch out.
Yeah. Like, you know, you're down the game. And then it's just like when they score that touchdown to go back up, when they go up on top in the fourth quarter, three plays, I'm like, and like, I hate to say it, cause you know, anything can happen. But like, to me, it's like, it kind of just felt like it was over at that point. But like, okay, they got serious and, you know, they went, ran right down the field on them. And
yeah.
So I mean, just my thoughts there. Just quickly, our concerns. I mean, obviously, I think the big one's still got to be the running game. I mean, that was, it's being too consistent now, that when they get up against teams that are notoriously good at stopping the run, that they're having a hard time running the ball. And I don't know. I think it's probably a mixture of everything. It's a mixture of the backs. It's a mixture of the line, and it's a mixture of the coaching, the play calling. And, you know, and I tweeted this a couple times. When they run the ball with Mayan Williams, it's like, I think sometimes his limitations of what he probably can do running the ball helps him in Ryan Day's mind. It's like, okay, he's not going to be doing a lot of stretch running. That's just not him. So we're going to, he likes to hit the hole fast. So we're going to give him running plays where he can get downhill fast. So like, and Trey Henderson, it's like they have this, like, and I know he's proven himself before, but they just have this thought that he can just do a little bit of everything. And they run those stretch runs with him, primarily with him. And for whatever reason, it just does not work with him. I mean, his touchdown in the fourth quarter, it's literally right up the middle. It's like, and he's gone, or, you know, or he had a lead blocker. He has a run, I think, in the third quarter where they just run him right up the middle. He gets 3-8 yards and then they go away from it. And it's like, you know, just go in with the same mindset. You have a great receiving core. You have a great quarterback. You don't need to do nothing fancy in the running game. Just let the guy, the offensive line, I think when they try to do some of that zone blocking stuff where they're stretching it out and they're trying to find areas to block, it seems like somebody misses a block and it seems like Trey's going too slow. And, you know, because he's trying to find the hole. Where in the other situations, it's just like the linemen, they know who they're going to block. Depending where the defense is, they know exactly where they're going for their blocks. And Trey hits the hole fast, and you know, and if that's as best as he's going to get, his 8 yards a pop, whatever.
Like, yeah. You know, I mean, here's my diagnosis of that. And you know, you can let me know if you think I'm kind of on to something and if it makes sense. So I think Mayan Williams has a much better feel for creating things on his own and has better vision than Trey does at this point in their careers. So even on the stretch runs, I think Mayan gets more out of them because he sees the holes better. He knows when to hit them. I think Trey does not have good timing on those, and he lacks a little bit in vision or lacks a little bit of confidence in those. When Trey, and here's the difference between the two. When you tell Mayan Williams that we are going to block for you, you need to hit this gap. And that's it. Just downhill. Mine's going to get you 4 yards, 5 yards, 6 yards. Hell, he might move the pile 10 yards. When you tell Trey Henderson, I was watching a lot of Trey Sermon from his game from Northwestern. When you tell Trey Henderson, you got to hit this gap. We're going to have a lead blocker in front of you. He can take that freaking 50 yards like that because he knows he has that blocker. He knows where he needs to go and he just explodes through that hole and he can make a move off that initial block. So I think that's the difference. And I think it goes a lot with what you're saying, but I don't think Trey just can create a lot for himself when he sees too many bodies at the line of scrimmage. He gets a little nervous and he starts dancing. He starts jump cutting. He loses his footing a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you. The big touchdown run, yeah. They run Rossi in front of him, and they also pull a
guard. Well, that was Cade. Cade Stover's the big touchdown run. Rossi's the 7-yard touchdown run that they run that little counter that we hadn't seen all game, and he has a lead blocker in front of him, and he does great off of it.
Yeah, so they get a lead blocker. They run a pulling guard, and that's straight-up blocking for the offensive line. And to me, that's just – it's no, like, just nothing that he really has to think about. And I'm not saying that he's never going to be able to do some of the other stuff. I think he will. It's just, you know, it takes timing and practice.
Yeah.
And you got to be, I mean, so much stuff has to click together to run those type of plays. So, like, I just wouldn't worry with him. I mean, I don't even think you need a lead blocker in there all the time with him. I think he feels comfortable with one, but, you know, just let the kid run to a hole and say, go fast. And,
yeah.
And he's going to break those for touchdowns. You're going to see those touchdown runs when he does it that way, when he just doesn't have to think about it. And I think that, you know, maybe they're just making him think too much. And I don't agree with some of the play calling. And it wasn't like this game was the only one that I've seen it with. It just seems like they kind of have, like, I get what you're saying. I think Mayan is better on the stretch runs, but he also doesn't see it that much. And
right.
You know, I think it's much more, I think maybe the reason why he's better than Trey is sometimes on the stretch runs is that they don't do it that much with him. So it's not as predictable. They run a lot of stretch runs with Trey and it's just, it's like the defenses are waiting for it. They're waiting to overload to whatever side the stretch is going towards. And they get like one extra guy there, or just alignment's just too slow. But I just think that it just, at times it feels like they have two different kind of playbooks, you know, for the two running backs. And it's like, they both do really good in this one way. And, you know, and on the other way, they don't really do, the one is having a lot of hard times with it, and maybe the other one isn't, but I just don't think he's doing a lot. So if they're both really good on the one way, and these are man on man blocking, you know, I'm going to knock you off the ball. And the offensive line seems like they run that a lot better, that, you know, just go with it. Like, I don't care if that's predictable. Like, hey, it's a 90% chance Trey Henderson's going through the, you know, whatever gap here. Like, let the defense stop it at that point. Like, you know, Urban Meyer on some of his running plays to Zeke, and when his running quarterbacks were there, he was very predictable. They still got the damn yards. Like,
yeah.
You know,
same
thing with JK too. Like, you knew when JK was getting the ball, a lot of times it felt like, you know, maybe not as much in 19 when, you know, Ryan Day was there, but prior to that, yeah, you just, Urban Meyer, he was predictable running the ball, but he always, 99% of the time, he got his yards.
Yeah. And I'm still on the fence with the opinion that, you know, the running plays that they do call take too long to develop when there is like zero chance of the quarterback holding on to it. Cause I mean that you're outmatched. I mean, that's the point why you call, you know, the draw or not draws, when you call like the options like that, so that quarterback takes out that other defender is going to be on him. And a lot of times you see that guy just crashes down on the running back because there is no threat of anything. And I know those aren't designed at all ever for CJ ever to hold on to them, especially the stretch runs. It's not like when they do it out of shotgun, but when it's like, when you only run it out of pistol to that one play, you know, it's so predictable. So, and I know Day wants to say that he doesn't think that there's a tendency to it. And I get that, you know, four out of the five times in the pistol, they had positive yards and looked good, but still, I mean, I don't know. I think that was a lot of what they ran into last year, was just teams knew when it was coming and that backside end just crashed down on it so much. And it seems like a little bit of that's been happening again this year.
And I'm not saying that Ryan Day, he's a smart playing call and coach. I'm not saying he doesn't have different pass plays built into that stretch run, and he hasn't felt like he needs to unload them yet. And, you know, that might be for somebody else down the, you know, that might be for a Michigan or for a playoffs or something.
Sure.
I'm not saying he doesn't. The guy definitely has pass plays on all his running formations and running plays on all his pass plays. I mean, I think that's pretty evident since he's been the coach at.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, so I don't know where that would go. You know, maybe they would unleash something later in the year and be like, okay, he kind of lulled some teams into sleep and, you know, and now he killed them on something. Just one last thing, just a little concern, just kind of going off of Ryan Day, is just that I love the guy's play calling, but I think he needs some if things get off track, I think he needs some simple plays in the offense just to get him back on track. Play it. Because when this team gets ahead on first down and he can go right to the line of scrimmage and he's playing tempo and they just go, you know, 8 yards, 6 yards, 10 yards. Like, guys, I don't know if there's a better play caller in the country than him. He feels the game. But when the game starts slowing down for him, sometimes he starts getting in his head stuff. So he might need some simpler, like, pass plays. Try to get back into a groove again. Like, you know, start running a little bit more wheel routes. Penn State ran that angle route on him, and I was like, God, why haven't Ohio State ran that thing with a running back yet? Where we're taking an angle to the middle of the field. And like,
That worked. I mean, remember that worked with Dobbins against Northwestern in 19.
Yeah. So I would just maybe try. Sometimes I think he gets a little bit in his head too, when he thinks things aren't working. And I, that, you know, maybe he needs to have a couple just maybe scripted plays. Hey, we're going back to the opening script just to try to get us back into the game.
Hey,
get us back into a groove.
Yeah, and the Cade Stover touchdown, though, I mean, that was a beautifully called play. I mean, that Trey...
Very much so.
Trey being, you know, a passing threat on that play, took that linebacker with them, and that just left the whole middle of the field open for Cade.
And that's a touchdown either way, because if that guy doesn't go with Henderson, he's open.
Oh, yeah.
The sideline. So, yeah, that's a Ryan Day play call. That's where he has two guys that can literally score on the same play because, you know, he's forcing the defender to make the choice of who gets to score the touchdown by going with the other guy. So,
yeah, absolutely.
All right. Anything else you want to hit on Penn State before moving into the ranking?
Just one minor concern was this was like the past defense outside of just, you know, corners giving up 50-50 catches. I don't think it was terrible, but this was the first time that you saw a little bit like some confusion, because there was that one play where like Ransom should have kept, like he should have stayed pat, you know, and he should have got that guy that like cut up the scene because JK Johnson released and he went in, like he bit on someone else, and that left, it might have been Parker Washington again, I'm not even sure who it was, but left him wide open there. So that was the only thing, was the pass defense for the first time looked a little bit shakier than what it had been. I think Tommy and Steele both were not their best in coverage. But I mean, to the credit, you know, Sean Clifford, he's kind of known sometimes that he will take off and run. And that's kind of, you know, that's part of what pays off with running, is linebackers respect that then, and then they'll bite down and you pass it. And I think that's kind of like why we harp on, you know, CJ Stroud so much, which he did have a couple scrambles in this game, and that's great.
I like that.
Yeah, but you know, that's why we talk about it. We don't want CJ Stroud to be a 150, 200 yard rusher. We don't want to be Justin Fields. We don't want him having design run calls. We want him to take what the defense gives him. So that way people, you know, if they are running man, if they are running zone, they won't, like, not everybody will go with his receivers. They'll respect him. Or if he starts running up a little bit, someone will bite on him, and then he has a more open throw. So it just helps.
You want to know who I want CJ Stroud to start emulating? It is the last Heisman Trophy winner at Ohio State. And I know a lot of people think that Troy was a running quarterback. Troy wasn't a running quarterback. Troy was a scrambling quarterback, and he picked up his runs were always on third down scrambles.
Yeah.
I mean, there were designed runs in the offense. I mean, I'm not saying there wasn't, but he was much more comfortable, you know, looking downfield to try to hit somebody. And if that wasn't there, he's going to take his 10 to 15 yards. I mean, go ask some of those were really good Michigan teams that he played back then. And go ask some of those guys, like how they liked, sitting back here and you know, waiting for him to start destroying them in the fourth, he'd go start looking for his runs down the field on scrambles and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That's all I want. If there's an opening in the field and you don't see it, and you don't even have to take it off every time it happens, keep looking downfield. But nobody there, go get your yards, man, and you know, keep the offense out there.
Actually, one more thing, and I swear this is it. We'll go on to the rankings after this. Would you like to see them a couple times a game, at least once a game for sure, run a play action and take like a deep, deep shot downfield? I think that's just something that's been missing with him, is like Stroud. It just doesn't seem like they really try to test, you know, that deep shot to like kind of keep the defense honest and, you know, maybe back them up a little bit. And I'm not a play caller. No, I'm not a receiver coach. I don't know.
Everybody's response to this will be like, well, if the running game is working, the a play action pass will work. And I disagree with that, because you could do that in a I would maybe in one of these weird situations, like 3rd and 3 and 3rd and 2, where Ohio State's been kind of predictable that they're going to run the ball, and you know, do it then. And you know, because everybody is expecting you to run because that's all you've shown,
right?
You know, so I think that could work in those situations. Yeah, you would like the running game to be working, and then you can. It's a lot easier, but you could kind of use maybe some of your predictability against you. And if you know Ryan Day is a very good play caller, you know, he, if he thinks that maybe he's being a little bit predictive, he can take back and kind of look at it maybe from a bigger picture and think maybe I'm being a little bit predictable in this spot. Well, then that's when you can start growing plays off of that. So yeah, in a situation like that, I wouldn't mind seeing something where they maybe tried it.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like from, you know, and I know the receivers are different, the quarterbacks are different. I just feel like over the years, you know, from Justin to CJ, that's something that's kind of not been as much a part of the game as it, you know, this year as it has been in the past. And maybe these guys just aren't as fast as what Olave and Garrett Wilson were, or maybe they don't run as, you know, clean as routes and get as open. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of different things there, a lot of different things the offense is trying, but I just feel like it's something that, you know, maybe they could try a little bit more often than what they do.
All right. College playoff rankings. So Ohio State came in at number 2. Tennessee was 1. Georgia was 3. Clemson was 4. Michigan's 5. And Bama is 6. So the top 6, I think probably almost everybody had that in the country with, you know, maybe, you know, you think TCU might have been in there a couple once, but I think got it. Most people, probably this was their top 6.
I mean, this was my top 6. I still think TCU deserved to be there over Alabama, but this was my top 6.
Yeah, it was my top 6 too. I had them in a little different spots. I actually had the way I had it, I had Bama 6, but I actually had Georgia, Tennessee 1 and 2, Ohio State, Michigan 3 and 4, and then Clemson at 5. So mm-hmm. that was the way I was looking at it.
Yeah.
I figured, I didn't think, I mean, I know everybody's at the ESPN's SEC homers and stuff like that. I did not think that there was not a chance in the world that even though it wasn't going to be on their channel, that they weren't going to be able to be like, it's number 1 versus number 2. I was not expecting Ohio State to be wedged in the middle of that. Maybe if the game was on ESPN, maybe that would have, even though you know, technically, you know, the committee guys don't work for ESPN, but you know, maybe that would have been a different thing. Who knows? That's just speculation.
Yeah, I had
that's just crazy speculation.
I had it Tennessee, Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, Alabama, Clemson. And even though, like I said, I thought TCU should be in the top 6 over Alabama, I figured the committee, they were going to put Alabama number 5 because that's something that they would do. So them being number 6 was actually kind of a pleasant surprise, not pleasant surprise, just unexpected surprise for me. Yeah. So let's talk just real quickly about what we think the committee is trying to set up, or what are they trying to tell us? Are they valuing, they're valuing schedule. I'm taking it with Tennessee beating Alabama. And the fact that they put Texas at 24, Wake Forest, Syracuse, Wake Forest, and NC State are 20, 21, and 22. And they've all had, you know, not looking great, bad losses this year. So that tells me that they are trying to prop up Clemson there to keep them hanging around for the long run. LSU for no reason should be number 10 at 6 and 2, at least in my humble opinion. And they just so happen to be playing Alabama this week. So, I don't know. I mean, I think that's what they're just saying, that, you know, we're going to take your wins, your strength of schedule, and your, you know, strength of your win. And that's what's going to be valued the most this year. And that's just kind of how it's playing out and kind of how they're setting it up to play out.
Yeah. The way I look at it. So obviously I think that they kind of want 2 SEC schools into the playoff.
Yeah.
They've positioned it for that to happen. They've obviously positioned Alabama to get in with 1 loss, if they can go in, keep 1 loss, and they position whoever that East school is going to be with 1 loss, to go in with one loss, because assuming Alabama beats that East team in the conference championship, I think they've also, so I don't think, I do see that they propped up Clemson a different, and I don't see anybody right now in the regular season beating Clemson. I think that they possibly would play North Carolina and the conference championship. They're not on the same side, right? I don't think they are.
No, they would play each other.
And North Carolina's quietly putting together a really good season. So, like, you know, that could be an interesting game for Clemson, where somebody could knock them off. They also are positioning Ohio State and Michigan that the loser of that game has an outside chance to get into these playoffs, because, you know, they're going to be arguably, I see them still both. I know Illinois is playing really good. I know Maryland could give some headaches. So those are interesting games to be the prior to the game that have to play those schools. But I see them both being undefeated pretty easily, you know, come that game in Columbus. So and if that ends up being like kind of a 2006 classic, you know, there's a shot there that, you know, that the loser gets in the game, depending. I mean, they might need some other stuff to happen. They might need Clemson to lose. They might need, you know, Alabama to drop, you know, against LSU or Ole Miss, you know, but, you know, there's outside possibilities there. It's interesting what happens to TCU if the Big Ten champs undefeated and Clemson's undefeated and everybody else has a loss, assuming a one loss SEC or an undefeated SEC champion is getting in the game. You know, does TCU an undefeated conference champion? Are they better than Michigan? I think probably they are, just because, you know, they'll have a conference championship and be undefeated. They probably would be able to beat out Ohio State's schedule at that point too, if Ohio State is the one that loses the game, you know, and they'd probably be able to beat out a second SEC team. But I don't know. You never know with that. They might come and say that, you know, TCU is really good. They're undefeated and conference champion, but, you know, the Clemson's undefeated. They've been there, done that. You know, they feel the ACC is better than the Big 12, and you have two SEC teams that are really good, and you got an undefeated Big Ten champion. And, you know, there's a loss there within the SEC, but, you know, let's say Tennessee beats Georgia, they have Alabama, Georgia, and then they lose to Alabama. Well, is an undefeated TCU better than Tennessee at that point? I don't know. Just a lot of things that are going to get put into play on that one.
I'm interested to see how Oregon, USC, if they hold pat, how that shakes out with whoever wins the Pac-12 title game. Because, I mean, I hate to say that the Pac-12's already eliminated. I think there's still a lot of football left, but we'll see. Just real quick, PSU, Penn State, staying in front of Illinois. I think that's kind of telling. I think there's room for Illinois to jump them, of course, if Illinois stays with only one loss. But the fact that they already kept Penn State in front of Illinois, I don't know if that's I don't know. There's probably conspiracy theorists out there, but I guess Michigan played Penn State also. So I was going to say, is that them trying to help Ohio State over Michigan?
It helps both of them.
Yeah.
So Ohio State and Michigan.
Yeah.
I know there's some Michigan fans that were upset that I saw that, you know, they felt they should be in front of Ohio State. And I've always hated when they try to use common opponents. I hate when the committee uses common opponents, because everything's different on any single day. And everybody's like, well, we crushed Penn State. But like, yeah, but, you know, we beat Iowa and Michigan State worse than you guys.
Right.
Iowa and Michigan State. So, like, I mean, we have three common opponents, not just one. So
I don't know. The thing about Michigan and Clemson, you can say all you want about Clemson's ranked wins. I mean, to my naked eye, and I hate giving these guys credit, I feel like, I guess there was the Indiana game and the Maryland game went into the second half, but I feel like Michigan, honestly, you know, since they got past those games, they've been probably the most dominant team as far as with Tennessee, with Ohio State right up there. I mean, it's not like Ohio State hasn't been dominant outside of the Penn State game, which, in, you know, we controlled the entire fourth quarter. But I think Michigan's been a really dominant team this year. And I have not felt Clemson's been dominant. I mean, I felt like Clemson should have lost to Syracuse. I felt like Clemson should have lost to Wake Forest. I'm wondering how good of a game Notre Dame can give them tomorrow. Like,
I think that probably just more has to do with, I just think Clemson's strength of schedule is probably better. I mean, like we both said, we both would have had Michigan four. And, but, you know, I've watched more Michigan than Clemson, even though I've watched a pretty decent amount of Clemson this year too. I think Michigan is a more of a complete team. They're probably about equal on defense, I would say. I just think Michigan's offense is the better.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, though, the people that are like, on neutral field, Michigan would kill Clemson right now. Michigan kind of just runs the ball. And I don't know. I think Clemson's defensive line could hold up for the challenge. Like, I think it would be a really good game.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay. Anything else you want to get into, or Northwestern?
No, it's just week one of this. So let's save some more for, you know, the rest of the weeks to come. Now let's talk Northwestern, man.
Yeah.
What is there to say?
This is not going to be as crazy as a breakdown.
I got no breakdown for Northwestern. They're terrible. They're 1-7. They've lost to FCS teams. They've lost to MAC teams this year. They should have lost to Nebraska in Dublin. Nebraska, you know, kicked that, or they kind of gave them that game with that onside kick. So, no, I mean, they should be 0-8 right now. This is not going to be a good game.
Yeah. I think the only thing we probably should talk about just for, you know, 5 minutes or 3 minutes, whatever, is just, I think this will be the worst weather game probably Ohio State's played of the season.
Yeah.
It definitely seems like it's going to be very windy. We're supposed to have a lot of rain. The rain has started tonight or earlier today. It seems like right now, maybe it's moving a little faster than they originally thought, and that, you know, it seems like the rain might be more AM, but it's dumping a lot of rain. And I don't expect Northwestern to be draining this field. I don't know what the drainage situation is at Evanston. I always know they like to keep the grass long for Ohio State. So, like, well, I expect it.
They still have a tarp they can put on the field.
I don't know if they will, man. They might just be like, you know, F it. You know, like, let's just try to get into a mud bowl with them.
I mean, it's not supposed to be raining at kickoff. So it's supposed to be windy.
Yeah, it seems like I said, when I looked at the rain, or it seemed like the rain came in a lot earlier than they were expecting, and it's moving faster. But it's big storms. I mean, they are taking big storms in the Chicago area tonight. And so it is a lot of rain that is going to be dropped on the field. So I expect muddy conditions on the field. So, you know, how does the running game look? You know, I would like to see that this could be a nice boost to, you know, get your offensive line going and be like, hey, who didn't like when you were kids playing in the mud? Go play. Let's go get dirty and knock them all over the field. I mean, what the hell?
And I think this gives you a chance too, that they're not going to run too many of those stretch runs because of, you know, if it is wet again, there's a tarp for the field. So depending on the field condition, you may not be wanting to go too much horizontally with your run game, you know, sideline to sideline, because it is harder to get your footing like that. So,
and horizontally they pass it too.
Right.
I mean, I know the wind is going to be interesting and stuff, but maybe when the wind's going against you, you call a couple different plays than when the wind on your, you know, maybe it could open when the wind's on the other side of the field behind you, you know, maybe it could open up some nice vertical routes when they go long.
Yeah. Just hopefully the wind doesn't take it too far. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Northwestern, and they're the worst offense in the Big Ten. I mean, they're bottom two in every category. They throw the ball a lot more than they used to. I think this game just really, when it comes to score, I think it does come down to what Fitzgerald wants to do. Does he just want to get out of there, given Ohio State a lower number? If that's his plan to try to play keep away from them, you know, you still got to get first downs to do that. And I don't know that they're capable of doing that. So we'll see. It'll be interesting. You, like you said, weather's bad, so it could be a lower scoring game. I don't know. Northwestern, I don't think they can stay in this very long. It's just, again, how much time can they possess to keep the ball away from Ohio State?
Yeah. All right. So who you think, who's going to be your projected offensive player of the game?
The running back situation's tricky again. It sounds like Mayan's okay. he's a tough as hell dude. Trey, you know, if he's just running upfield, he might be okay. You know, it might be him. I'm going to go with Cade Stover. I think there's going to have to be a lot of short throws in this game for CJ Stroud because of the win. I think Cade's going to reap the benefits of those and, you know, have anywhere between 7 to 10 catches in this one.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think I don't know if he's ready or not, or possibly ready or not. But this is definitely not a game that JSN's going to be playing in, because I can pretty much predict that one for tomorrow. That he's like, I think they'd be, even if he came to him and said he wants to play, I think they'd be pretty stupid with possibly, you know, the field being very slick. That
it sounds like it's kind of like it's known, but it isn't said out loud that there's no chance of him playing before Michigan.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of what it feels like. I'm going to say I like the Stover call. I'm going to say Harrison Jr.
That's a good one.
He caught a lot of last week. You know, a lot of his passes were like 15-yard slant rounds,
yeah,
and different things like that. And, you know, so they didn't not like they necessarily challenged a lot down the field. Dude catches like everything thrown at him, and it doesn't matter, you know, where he's at on the field. So like, I think that he's just going to keep on. I mean, I don't care what anybody says, he's best receiver in the country. And,
yeah, he like, is,
you know, and I mean, he should win the Blitnikoff. And, you know,
I mean, I know the Tennessee kid has really, really good numbers too. So I'm not,
I know. I get that. And, you know, it's the SEC. It just beats more down there.
Right. Right.
All right, your defensive player of the game.
I'm going to say Jack Sawyer. I feel like Zach Harrison, you know, kind of broke out against Iowa, even though he had shown some different things during the year. JT Tumuilau, he had broken out last week, and he had been so close all year. I think Sawyer's been kind of maybe a step or two behind those guys, but I think it's his turn to shine, and I think he's going to have a really nice game.
I think he can have a good day. I do think that this could be, I think this is going to feel a lot like Iowa, just an offense that just can't do shit.
Right.
You know, pardon my language, but I just think that's just how I feel. But I'm going to go with JT Tuilagi. I just think that he had such a breakout freak game, and now he's going to be like, I think he's now on there that he's ready to start just being the man of that defense. Between him and I kind of think him and Tommy Eichenberg kind of feels like that they're the dudes on the defense. And mm-hmm. Not saying no, everybody else is, you know, chopped liver or anything like that. I mean, they're loaded on defense. It's just, you know, I just think that this will be a very good game for him. I could see him getting another turnover. I could see him getting a few more sacks. I just think he seems like the freak is getting ready to start coming out now. And, you know, these next couple of weeks are going to be some big time padding stat numbers for him, I think.
Yeah, no, I can agree with that. All right. Bold prediction for the game. So I think actually the last 2 weeks, now that I think about it defensively, I think both of our bold predictions hit, because I said 6 turnovers and exactly, you know, 3-3 against Iowa. Actually, I said Spencer Petra, so mine didn't exactly hit all the way. You said, I think you said a combined 7 with turnovers and sacks, didn't you?
Yeah, for last.
And that ended up being the number. So we're on a roll right now with at least defensive bold predictions. I'm going to go offensive on this one, though. I think Chip Trainum is going to end up with 65 yards and a touchdown.
I'm gonna go defense again like this. I think this is gonna be I think there's gonna be a defensive touchdown And I definitely think that there's going to be five turnovers in this game. So it's just, it seems like that it took them a while to become turnover machines. And now that they're finding them everywhere that they're at, they're becoming ball hawks and stuff like that.
And I will call Jack Sawyer to get two sacks in this game.
So, yeah, I think that they will be playing. I think that they'll have at least five turnovers. So one of them will be a touchdown.
I like it. Okay. All right. So around the Big Ten, Minnesota travels to Nebraska at noon. Minnesota is a 14.5 point favorite. Sure. Why not? I mean, that's the friggin' Big Ten West, whoever knows. So yeah, I'll say Minnesota covers this and wins by 15 or more.
You know? Yeah. I'm going to go with that too. I do want to say that, you know, and I'm not going to spend a bunch of time on this. Maybe this is an off-season conversation. Nothing against Mickey Joseph. I think it's a bad. It sounds like what he is going to be the permanent coach.
I don't know. That wasn't. I don't think that was a reliable source that I read. But okay. He said his source is never wrong. So I don't think that's. I don't think that's a done deal.
I'll back off of it. I haven't. Yeah, you know, I've been. We've been a little bit under the weather, some other stuff going on this week. I haven't spent a lot of time looking at it, but yeah, you mentioned to me the other way. So I won't say anything, but I mean, no offense to them. If that's their guy they want to go with, I just think that would end up being a bad call. I think that not that against him, I think he could be a good head coach somewhere, but I just think there's some real actual people out there that could really be good for Nebraska. And Nebraska has the money that should be able to bring them in. And like, I'm not talking about, you know, A-list coaches like Urban Meyer and stuff like that, or even Luke Fickell, but hell, the coach that just beat you guys this past weekend, you know, go get him before Iowa decides that they're fired for Ferentz. They can get
him. No, I agree. Kind of leads us to the next game. Iowa against Purdue, travels to Purdue at noon. Purdue's a 3.5 point favorite. I don't know what to make of this, because Purdue a lot of times they don't always match up well against big physical teams, but their offense is so much more dynamic than a lot, you know, than what Iowa is, especially. I mean, Iowa can't score, and I just don't see Purdue not being able to score at least in double digits. So I don't know. I mean, Iowa, who did they beat up on? Oh, yeah, Northwestern. They beat up on Northwestern. I mean, that's another. Northwestern gave up points. They gave up points to Iowa.
Doesn't count.
Purdue's a 3.5 point favorite. I'm going to say they cover, because I just don't think Iowa can score with them. I don't think Purdue's necessarily is, you know, can like run it down Iowa's throat or anything, but I just think that they can get at least three scores, touchdowns on Iowa. And I just don't think Iowa can do that against Purdue. So I think Iowa or Purdue's going to cover.
Where's the game at again?
It's in West Lafayette.
Yeah, I think they cover too. It's just the only thing Iowa's offense is just god awful, and like
it's so bad.
I think it's going to be a low scoring game though, because Iowa's defense will keep them in this. And I do see where you're saying that they do kind of maybe fall short against more powered teams. It seems like for Purdue, but I think they win probably. I think they're going to win like probably like 17-0 or 17-7.
Like, yeah, I agree.
So, yeah. That's what I'll say.
Also noon game, Maryland travels to Wisconsin. Wisconsin's a 5-point favorite. I don't know if Leonard's there yet. I think Maryland's a better team than Wisconsin. I think Maryland's going to win this outright. Even over in Madison.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard like people like Joe Thomas talk that Madison ain't the same, home field advantage that it once was,
especially not at noon. I don't think.
No, I think Maryland beats them. I just think that they're the better team. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what Wisconsin does with their coaching.
Oh, Purdue beat Maryland. I'm like, who else beat Maryland in the Big Ten? It was Purdue. All right, Penn State travels over to Indiana at 3:30. Penn State's a 13.5-point favorite. I don't like Indiana. I mean, I think there's different things Tom Allen has strengths with that does give some teams some issues sometimes. I know he had a game going with Michigan, at least for the first half. How did that game end up? Oh, 31-10. That did not end up well. So it did not. The Michigan really turned it on in the second half. I don't know. I mean, James Franklin he's been broken before when Ohio State has beaten him.
That's what I was going to say. Go with you. I mean, you think they're going to cover?
No, I don't know. I think Indiana can keep this within like a 10-point game. I think they're going to lose. Yes, but I don't think Penn State's going to beat them by 14 or more.
It always seems like Indiana kind of plays Penn State tough.
They do.
I think this will probably be their, especially since they have to come to Columbus. This will be their, big home game this year that, you know, they really got to play tough against. I think Penn State beats them, but I was going to say that, you know, James Franklin has flopped before after losing to Ohio State. And it seems like that, you know, that's always a tough game. And it's like Penn State always, that's I think their actual rival is Ohio State. So yeah. Like, their juices, they get like so up emotionally for that game. And I think that's sometimes why I always skews that game where people think is, you know, especially in years that maybe Penn State's not as good as people think, that, you know, people think, well, so Ohio State really as good as they are. I mean, Penn State almost beat them. It's like Penn State always plays us tough for whatever reason. That game is tough. Mm-hmm. And that I just think that they always seems like they always emotionally put everything on the table and then they drop games the following week. I don't think they'll lose to Indiana, but I do think Indiana covers.
Okay. 3:30 game. Michigan State heads over to number 16, Illinois. Illinois is a 16-point favorite. I mean, the weather is going to be bad in Evanston. Well, I guess at that point, it's probably further away that it's cleared up more.
And actually, the angle that the weather is coming in, I don't know how bad it's going to be down in Champaign.
Okay.
It's coming like a northeast. Like.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, 16 seems like a lot for Illinois against Michigan State, but just kind of like what we said about Penn State being broken. I mean, Michigan State has suspended players now. They got their asses handed to them by Michigan. I mean, I think they're going to be a little bit of a broken team. I think Illinois is going to cover this.
16 seems like a big number for Illinois, but I kind of agree with you. I think they are going to cover. If the weather is bad, I mean, it's just that's a Bielema game. You know what you're getting with Brett Bielema. I said a couple years ago, I believe you agreed with me, and when he came in and took that job, I'm like, he could be very competitive there. And not because necessarily Illinois is the greatest program ever, but he knows what he wants to do. He doesn't go away from that. And the rest of the Big Ten West is very suspect at times. And so I thought he could very well be very competitive there and win games. And, you know, he knows the brand of football he wants to play, and his brand of football works this time of year. And one thing I know about Champaign, it's going to be windy regardless.
Yeah.
And I've not been impressed with Michigan State's running game. So like,
no.
I think
there is no cream in the Big Ten West. Let's just call it what it is. And so, yeah, we were like, why not him? Why couldn't he turn this team around and they could be a contender in the Big Ten West? Everyone realistically is a contender in the Big Ten West because no one separates themselves. They were all outside of Wisconsion for a while, and then they have fallen back to mediocrity like the rest of these guys.
I think they can cover. So I think they will cover.
This one's interesting to me. Michigan goes to Piscataway. It's a 7:30 game. Michigan is a 26-point favorite. I think sometimes Harbaugh, I think there's a respect between Harbaugh and Schiano. I think sometimes Harbaugh plays into a game that Schiano could be comfortable coaching against. So I think Michigan has the horses that they could cover this spread. For sure they do. I mean, for sure they have the horses can. But I just don't see it happening. Night game in Piscataway. I'm going to hate myself for this. I think Rutgers is going to, you know, beat this, and they'll win within 26, or they'll lose, but it'll be within 26 points.
Rutgers always seems to play them tough, but I do think Michigan has the horses. I do think they'll wear them down. I'm not expecting this to be like, you know, 50 pointers for Michigan, but I'll say that I think they'll cover. I think they'll hold probably Purdue or Rutgers under 10, and they'll score, you know, upper 30s, and okay. You know, so they'll cover.
Very good. All right, let's go around the country real quick. TCU is a 7-point favorite or 8-point favorite at home against Texas Tech at noon. TCU has a very explosive offense. I think they'll cover that.
Yeah, I agree.
Tennessee travels to Athens, 3:30 CBS game. Everybody should be tuning into this one. George, because it is number one, Tennessee versus number three, Georgia. Georgia is a 9-point favorite at home, even though they are ranked lower. They are the defending national champions. Michael, are they being disrespected that they weren't number one and this game's in their own house? Will they cover a 9-point spread?
I like how Tennessee's playing defense right now. That was a good Kentucky team they beat last week, and mm-hmm. they handled them pretty easily. I've always been not a Stetson Bennett fan. I think he's, I don't see it.
Average. You want to say he's average?
Yeah, mediocre.
I think they say mid nowadays is what they, I think that's what the kids are saying.
I think Georgia wins at home, but I actually don't think they come. I think it's going to be
3-point game.
A 3-7 point, I will say. I think it's going to be a very good game. I think that there could be some back and forth with it. And I think the defenses will play very good. I think it's going to, I feel it's like it's going to be like a 27-24, 27-20 game that Georgia wins.
I can't believe I'm going to do this. I think Tennessee's going to win outright. I think Tennessee's going to win by at least 10, honestly.
I like it.
I think Georgia's suspect sometimes. I don't think they can keep Tennessee under 30 points, and I don't think they can beat a team that can score 30 points.
There's one caveat, and I heard it this week, and I told our dad, I'm like, I don't know, man. But I heard that. So when the rankings got released, you know, Dabo Sweeney plays it very cool. You know, well, we could have been one, but we could have been 10. Ryan Day plays it very cool and stuff like that. Heupel, man, you know, yeah, there's other games to go, but we got to relish this moment and blah, blah, blah. He just hasn't been there before, so I don't know.
And that's true. They haven't been there before, and it's still Tennessee. I mean, they could be fraudulent. We've seen Alabama lose plenty of 3-point games over the years, and they still end up in the national title game, and the team that beat them doesn't. So let's face facts here. I saw Ole Miss beat them 2 years in a row. Where the hell was Ole Miss? I don't know. Alabama was in the national title game both those years, though.
Yeah. I just think, you know, Georgia's been there, done that, and Tennessee hasn't. Yeah, there's a lot of pressure now. Tennessee, it's nice being the underdog at, you know, at home against Alabama, and you beat them. It's a different story, you know, going to Athens, going to be a rowdy crowd, and now the target's on your back.
The only thing that sucks about the timing of this game is I don't think it doesn't matter. Neither one of these teams can break the other one. Because no matter who wins, and I'm sorry, I'm not an SEC fan, so this is some bias coming out right now, but neither one can break the other one enough because their schedules are so easy the rest of the way out. Like, there's no chance whoever loses this game is losing a second game. So, I mean, really, you almost hope Tennessee beats Georgia handedly, so at least that would eliminate Georgia, you would assume, from a playoff contention, because they would have lost by, you know, multiple scores at home. Because Tennessee, I'm sure, even if they lose by 3 scores, they'll find a way to give them some sort of benefit of the doubt that it was a tough road environment.
Well,
okay. You want to add anything to that? Sorry.
I'll add it when we get to the other game of the SEC, what I was going to say.
Okay. Hold on. Let's see. Let's go right to that game then. So Alabama travels to Death Valley, Baton Rouge style. Alabama, this is a night game. So 7 p.m. Alabama's a 13-point favorite. I don't think they're going to cover this. I think they're going to win, though.
LSU beats them. I'm going to call it right now. I think that they're going to upset them. I like how they've been playing the last few weeks. And I don't know. I just got that weird feeling that LSU is going to beat them. And that is the situation where a blowout in Georgia's favor could really kill Tennessee, because if Alabama gets a second loss, and maybe they should have lost to Texas.
Could have lost to A&M.
People could start saying, well, Alabama's just not their year this year, so for Tennessee.
All right. I'm skipping over that one because I don't believe Texas should be ranked. Clemson is number 4 in the country. They go over to South Bend at 7:30. Clemson is a 4-point favorite. I believe Marcus Freeman's going to have some magic going for him in this game. I know you think Clemson's going undefeated. I think Notre Dame is going to win this game outright, though.
Sorry, I was coughing.
That's all right.
What's the
4 points, Clemson?
Clemson covers. Clemson beats them.
All right. I'm good. Jumping straight to Ohio State from there. There are a couple more ranked games, but as teams, yeah, I don't really know that well. So Ohio State is a 38-point favorite. We've already released our scores, so everyone knows that I'm predicting Ohio State to cover. I have them winning 66-3. I just think they're going to score early and often, even if it's a sloppy mud fest. Northwestern's defense sucks, so they'll be face down in the mud, and you know, Mayan Williams will be running like a six flat 40, but he'll still be running by everybody. So Ohio State wins easily, covers easily too.
Yeah. It seems like the weather's moving a little faster that, you know, you could very easily be right. I said 41-0. I would stick by that. I think this is that game, though. This is a boring game. Ohio State starts getting up. The running game's working. Brian Day just wants to get out of there in the second half and go home. So I think in the weather, everything else, and they just try to, you know, run the clock out second half. But that's just kind of how I feel. 41-0.
I could see it. I mean, I don't know. I think Ohio State is just too dominant for them for that. But it could happen. Like you said, weather, Ryan Day wants to get out of there. It very well could happen. I don't know if they're holding Ohio State to 2 field goals, though.
Yeah. I agree with that one. So that could be where I'm wrong. They could be 49.
All right. As far as our victory shot, Michael, what are we going with this week?
I was looking around. I think we're going to do Buffalo Trace.
I love Buffalo Trace. So I don't feel like the Buckeyes are going to lead me astray here. We were scared for a little bit last week. We were going to have to bust out the Peach Crown. That's the loser shot, in case anyone doesn't know that. Buckeyes came through. I don't see any reason why they won't again. So we'll be enjoying Buffalo Trace around 4 p.m.
Yep. All right. Let's get on out of here.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for stopping in tonight to the Buckeye Bar. I'm John.
I'm Mike.
OH.
IO. Go Buckeyes.
Go Buckeyes.